I'm co-chairing this particular little task force with Jessica, who works in the chancellor's office. And I have other folks here. Would you like to introduce yourself? Chris Bulak, maybe? Start with you.
Sure. I'm Chris Bulak. I'm the electronic resources librarian at CSU Northridge. I'm just a member of the group here.
Go right ahead.
Hi. Can you hear me? It's Christine.
Yep.
Oh, great. So I'm Christine Holmes, electronic resources coordinator at San Jose State University.
And those on chat only, right, if you want to type something really quick, I can read it for you. And I'm Jessica Hartwickson from the Chancellor's Office. Sorry, let me introduce myself. The Chancellor's Office, that's our central office, and we have a central purchasing of packages. And so that's part of this question is, of these packages, is the recommendation, like I said, like Stacey was saying, do we take the collections that are in the CZ, or do we make a collection of the physical record and then create a collection that way?
So that's kind of where we are. And we're really grateful to you for being willing to speak to us.
So. Sure. Well, maybe we should just briefly introduce kind of who we are and how we may or may not be able to help you. So my name is Mitch Lundquist, and Brandon reached out to me. I was the project director for our ALMA implementation. So really kind of the project management responsibilities through that and worked with the various groups. We went live just over a year ago. It was May of 2015. Again, I'm kind of here to reach out and try to bring in some of our expertise as it might be of value to you. There might be some other folks too that we can reach out to. The folks at the table now are some of the people here at Madison that I was able to bring in. So maybe I'll just let them briefly introduce themselves and then we'll kind of begin the discussion. Does that sound all right?
Mm-hmm. Sounds good.
All right.
So I'm Jackie Freeman, and I'm the Assistant Director for Licensing.
Can't hear you.
Sorry. I'm Jackie Freeman, and I'm the Assistant Director for Acquisitions and Licensing here at UW-Madison. But I guess I can add on to that a little bit when we start our discussion. We also have a memorandum of understanding with the UW system to manage the shared electronic resources for the consortia. So we do work in both areas in terms of the network zone and the IZ, and both locally and at the system level.
Oh, excellent.
That's good.
Okay.
My name is Bill Byrne, and I work for Jackie in the acquisitions department. And my unit orders individual ebooks from Yankee Book Peddler's Gobi database.
Okay.
Hi, I'm Katie. I work in LTG for Mitch, and I'm relatively new here, but if you have technical questions, I guess, on setting things up in the network zone, I've recently been helping out with that.
Okay.
All right, so that's our table. I'm flipping around. I don't know, pointing at me for some reason, just because probably no one else wants to point at them. Not either. Anyway.
And we do have a couple more people who are not on mic, but we have Michelle Swadesh from Fullerton. She's the Electronic Resources Librarian. We have Lisa Roberts from Sacramento. She's also Metadata ERM Librarian. And then Ying, she also works with me at the Chancellor's Office.
Okay. Great. So how do we want to kick this off? Do you have specific sorts of questions or...
Well, I'm sure Jessica has some, particularly for your person there who's in charge of the shared electronic resources.
Yes.
So I don't want to interrupt that. I mean, I guess the one thing that I would say off the bat is I see us as having two issues. One is how to migrate our data so that we can manage it the most effectively post-migration, and then also develop best practices for managing all the data from there on in once we're live. So anything that you can offer on either of those issues, I think, is of interest to us. But I'll let Jessica go with any specific questions she might have.
Okay, so I am curious about how you have ebooks set up in the network zone. What we did on my end is I did the migration from SFX, and I took those packages and then migrated them over to the network zone. whether or not those same ebooks also migrated to the network zone from the local library systems depends on what the library did locally. interestingly enough, my recommendation to everybody was if you want to see the difference, then migrate both so you can take a look at what an e-collection looks like versus a record that was migrated from your catalog. So I'm just curious, how does that look in your network zone? Do you have both? Do you offer both up where you have something that was an e-collection versus a physical record from the library catalog?
Okay, so as far as where we were before we migrated, we used SFX. We would not have been doing anything in our system with system resources at that time, because that would be outside of Madison. So when we had Voyager, every school had its own instance, and there would have been no instance of at system level, if you will. So when we migrated, we did with the SFX records. The SFX records stayed in, right? We migrated
those records. We had the option, I think, of excluding them because they have an SFX tag in them, and we actually used that tag for other items we wanted to exclude, like colleges had loaded the early English, the 150,000 early English books online. Those got excluded, and they were just, we just added an SFX tag to them, and then on migration they got dumped because that was part of the migration form. But not all campuses were managing ebooks and SFX. That might be
right, and a lot of our are so much smaller that in many cases campuses weren't managing kind of the ordering operation and everything in there either. It was in Voyager, they were only managing the access, if you will.
So when you had a campus that had, let's say it wasn't an SFX managed package, let's say they had downloaded the records from the vendor, for instance, did you advise them to migrate those or not migrate them?
That library was one that I think migrated.
I'm sorry, we can't hear you.
Net library, I recall, was one package that that most people did migrate, and there had, that was a long time ago, like what, 2005?
Yeah, that was probably when the very original purchases made. Yeah, it was years ago.
System-wide purchase of NetLibrary back when it was OCLC and not EBSCO.
Right, because we actually have a similar package.
Okay, that they could migrate because it had OCLC numbers. And so as the campuses migrate into the network, or they migrate into Alma, the first campus in, their stuff ended up in the network zone if it had an OCLC number. And then any other subsequential campuses, those records would deduplicate. So they wouldn't be extra records. They would match on it, and the holdings would just be attached.
Right. And so presumably that's what you'll see in your network zone as a master record, is the first in, really. And for us, records were the first in.
We're actually doing it where OCLC is going to pre-populate the network zone with the system's holdings, so it won't necessarily be first in, but the principle is similar. It's still the OCLC number that's the match point. Because that set of records had OCLC numbers on it, then did you, post-migration, did you choose to gather them into a collection for managing later or not?
So Okay, so when we talk about the network zone, we're talking about just the central repository of all the bibliographic data.
Right.
About the e-resources themselves and where we put consortial resources, whether they're in the network zone. We're talking about logging in a network zone and managing in a network zone as opposed to at the institutional zone. So usually when I'm talking about network zone for e-resources, we're trying to be clear, are we using a network zone CZ or local collection option, or are we using an IZ CZ or network, or CZ or local option? So if we talk about the types of e-resources we may have packages of ebooks, we may have individual ebooks. We don't have any PDAs right now, but we do have EBAs. We might have any of those at a consortial level, and we might have some at the institutional level. We actually haven't implemented many at that network zone level where it's controlled centrally. We have one book collection out there right now, which is the Wiley, right? Mm-hmm. And what we did with those was, well, let me think now. No, we get bibliographic records from the publisher, and mm-hmm. we're adding them, say, on a monthly basis. There's a schedule to it.
Yeah,
right now.
Added it to the network zone.
But it is a local collection. It's not a CZ collection.
Yeah.
So your that collection you're managing, it's your collection but managed in the network zone.
It is. Well, this would be a collection that is consortial that everyone in the system has access to.
Right.
So we put it in the network zone utilizing a local collection, and Madison is coordinating that, if you will. And then we load records every single, well, however often they send them. And I don't think it's monthly. I think it's more frequently than that. Mm-hmm. And so we're actually doing the management work for all the other system schools in that regard.
Is it just because the records
yeah, so in terms of determining whether we use CZ or IZ, CZ or local collection, it's typically the quality of the records. What's possible? Is it available in the CZ? And then is it a good record? Does it match what our collection is? In some cases, our collections don't match anything that's out there in the CZ.
All
right. Acquired. So there is that evaluation. And generally speaking, the catalogers determine which methodology they would prefer to use.
Is there someone who makes that decision for the system? Is there a committee or?
CZ level, typically Madison would decide. We'd go to our catalogers, and if necessary, we go, and if there's concerns about it, we have some system-wide committees. Shared content is the one that deals with cataloging acquisitions and e-resources, and that committee would discuss it if necessary. But generally speaking, I think the schools are pretty happy if we just go ahead and provide it, since we're providing, in essence, the best bibliographic record we think we can.
Okay.
Yeah, it's worth just, you know, briefly mentioning that. So there's essentially 14 four-year campuses, 13 four-year campuses, and then our UW colleges, which is a series of an additional 14 two-year campuses across the state of Wisconsin. And so we've got kind of a system-wide governance structure, even though we all came from our own individual Voyager implementations. We use this opportunity for a shared network zone, and so are finding ourselves needing to work together much more closely. So to facilitate that, we've got a governance structure in place where we've got these working groups. As Jackie mentioned, resource sharing being one, that it's a group that has some representation from various campuses across the state to kind of vet some of these decisions. And we've got similar groups to deal with, you know, technical data issues, with fulfillment issues, et cetera, a couple of others.
Does your, I'm particularly interested in your shared content groups, but I think other people would be interested in the acquisitions too. Do you have any like policy documents or things like that that you would be willing to share?
Well, I think we've gotten lots of documentation. By the way, acquisitions falls within the shared content.
Oh, okay.
When we migrated, we actually had that as kind of a separate group. And then when we went to production, we decided to kind of have a broader shared content category, which really kind of encompasses cataloging issues, acquisitions issues,
we look at them a little bit more holistically within an Elm environment than we have in the past. So it does make the scope of that group very broad, as Jackie could attest to. But so that's the way it's structured right now. In terms of sharing documentation, it kind of depends on the sorts of things you're interested in, whether they're migration things, project things, particular practices. I mean, we've got a lot of
yeah.
All of the above.
So we have content finished an update to our bibliographic record policy, which we, in essence, share with all the schools across the state and hope everyone's kind of following those guidelines. We haven't written up anything specific to electronic resources. Mm. In principle, it should fit in with all the other cataloging guidelines. Mm. And that might be a particular interest because it's, you know, when are things loaded in which area? When do they go into the network zone? When do they go into the IZ? But as far as the kind of shared network instance, I think there's limited access from the other schools in terms of managing any resources centrally too. But there are very, very few, relatively few people that have access to the network zone to manage the electronic resources. So that typically is happening here. And I have one staff person who does most of our work related to system resources. So she's involved in the system licensing, but then also having her work on the system consortial-wide access to those same resources. And then we also have, which may be a bit of an exception, we have a lot of resources that are Madison resources. We pay for them, but they may be extended free of charge to all the other schools. Mm. So we manage those, but we would like those to be in the network zone instance in order to provide them to the other schools easily so that we don't have to tell every single school, go out and turn this on because you now have access to it. So, and that is a very large set of resources.
Well, I think I speak for Jessica when I say, whatever you got, we would love to receive it.
Especially like a best practices or if you've anything like that. Or
be careful what you ask for.
I know.
Well, we're just like wandering in the woods here because this is all new to us. But you guys sound like your situation is very, very analogous to ours. Mm-hmm. In terms of size, and there's a lot of similarities in the way that resources are managed. We would love to not have to reinvent the wheel.
Some of the policy documents, best practices, you know, even, you know, when we talk about network zone, for example, you know, we created a working group specifically to look at policy around that, knowing that that's kind of a sensitive area. And so, I mean, I can probably try to gather together some of the documentation and check with Jackie and shared content as it applies to that and see what we can share out. Much of it's documented within a wiki and a knowledge base environment. I can't, unfortunately, give you direct access to those environments. I need to kind of extract selected bits from that, but
sure.
You can try to put some things together. And in the broader project things, I've shared much of that with Brandon, I believe. Brandon, maybe, and or David.
Okay.
But I know this is a little narrower focus here.
Yeah, I mean, our focus specifically is on ebooks, but also shared electronic resources more generally. Do you guys manage any streaming video packages? Do you have any for your system?
So Madison is in the process of working with Canopy. That'll be our first major streaming video. We haven't had that to date.
Are you doing that as DDA or getting a package?
No, DDA, it'll be the entire thing open to everyone, and then based on usage, we'll automatically purchase, subscribe for a year, 3 years. Many of the other system schools have their own access to Canopy in various formats, parts of things, all of things. Some people want to publicize it, some people don't. I think one of the discussions we've had, and we haven't gone anywhere with it yet. I mean, the fact of the matter is we don't have that many things in our shared network instance yet. So what we're trying to do is get those loaded first, if you will. Because in doing so, every time we put something in that zone, if you will, and manage it centrally, we also have to go back to all the schools and tell them to make sure you turn this off, turn that off, however they managed it in the past. Mm-hmm. Coordinating that has proven to be a bit of a challenge, if you will. And, you know, everyone else has opinions on how it should look and, you know, what it should be worded as. And mm-hmm. we spent a lot of time, for example, talking about naming conventions. What do you name these things? What does the public see when schools want to know where the access is coming from? So if you're dealing with troubleshooting, do you know that this campus acquired it on their own, or do they know it's a system resource, so you need to go to system to get the problems fixed, or do they know it was extended from Madison and they need to come to us so that we can get the problems fixed? So there are those complexities there as well. But what I was going to say, too, is it's kind of the bigger picture of issues and looking at not just ebooks, but all e-resources, because we also talked at least a little bit about Primo and how Primo interfaces with it. Mm-hmm. For example, Wiley ebooks, we actually have also turned on in the PCI, because that actually gives additional table of contents data.
Right.
We cannot do that with other individual resources. If it's identical to us loading a local collection, then, you know, why bother with the PCI potentially? But if it gives us extra information, maybe that is something we want to do. And that actually ends up being kind of coordination beyond what we think of as shared content. That's mm-hmm. our discovery fulfillment group.
Yeah.
So there are other relationships there.
Right.
The other interesting one that's recently come up is the whole issue of Google Scholar.
Sure. Well,
Katie can talk about that.
This doesn't really affect your ebook so much as it will e-journal set up at the network zone level. What we've noticed, and we just kind of tripped across this in the last couple of weeks, is that there's a couple of kind of gotchas. One, you can go ahead and set up with a collection at the network zone, but if all of the other campuses still have it activated locally in their IZ, you know, bringing it in from the CZ, their Primo will default to the IZ first and override the NZ. So they'll see what they have locally versus what we've activated in the network zone. So when Jackie was saying before, like, that you need to kind of coordinate with campuses and things like that, they were like, yeah, it looks fine, but they're looking at their own instances. So that's one thing. The other thing is Google Scholar. So right now each campus has set up the Google Scholar job to populate, or, you know, to pull all of their resources, and then if their users go to Google Scholar, they can see what they have available. As we start moving these e-journals up to the network zone, our local instances of Google Scholar are not grabbing what's been activated in the network zone. If you use the Alma help menu, there's this little box that says, if you're part of a consortium, contact your systems person to have this set up in your network zone. And we're like, oh, okay. So then we're like, does anyone know how to do this? No. They don't know how to do it. So we're waiting. We're waiting on that.
Okay. Okay. Wow, yeah.
And the other resources then, like Canopy, where there are a number of schools that have their own subscriptions to them. We don't have any method right now for saying, let's try and manage them centrally on behalf of these other schools. I think that poses a lot of potential issues, because if people have acquired them on their own, they have their own content, may or may not be the same. They may have their own subscription periods, their own budget restrictions, and then this communicating, try and manage it centrally, but someone might say, well, I'm canceling this month, and then I'm getting something else, and how does that all get communicated? So we haven't done anything in that vein yet, and I would say it's going to be extremely complicated if we want to go that route. And we also need to look at the bigger picture of what it means in terms of staffing and the work done at various schools, you know, what they want to do, what they want to control, and what they would prefer to have managed centrally as well, and what we feel centrally we could take on.
Yeah, all questions that we have too. I mean, I was going to throw out a specific example of, and this exists lots of places in our system, we have a centrally purchased ebook subscription which is eBury Academic. So the whole system has access to that. But of course, then we also have individual campuses who have purchased title by title from eBury. Some of them have DDA projects currently going on as well. So how would you handle a situation like that, for instance?
Well, actually, we have eBury Academic Complete as a subscription right now.
You do? Okay.
You do. And that particular one is, let me think now, make sure I have my collections right. That one is a Madison collection, so that is not extended to the other schools. But it's another one, let me talk Project Muse. Okay, so Project Muse, Madison has a deal. We're going hopefully for 3 years. System has just jumped in and they are contributing for 1 year. And so this is where kind of the complexities arise, and we're actually gonna have a discussion next week. How do we want to decide how to manage it? In principle, I would say we would want a local, without looking at the records, one would have to say either a CZ or a local collection in the NZ. That way it's managed centrally for everyone to see. One would, at the end of whatever time period, evaluate the usage. And system will actually buy some of those titles, which would mean, you know, like $100,000 worth, whatever, which would mean we would then create a separate local collection of those titles, because those will be things that we, in essence, own in perpetuity, and we want to keep that separate from, say, the DDA, which could continue to exist, may or may not at this point, we don't know. But we'd have a local collection of those. But what it also means is we know we may have gone out and bought other Project Muse titles. In our local instance, we would also have to have, here in our IZ, we would also have to have a local collection of then those titles that say we have acquired. So you could have multiple, kind of like Wiley, actually. We have multiple collections that are kind of related. They might be like Wiley eBooks, system-driven Wiley eBooks Madison Extended, and Wiley eBooks from our local collection. And it does get really complicated. And then you start thinking about, well, how am I going to name these? How am I going to know what's coming from where without overwhelming the end user? Because the end user doesn't really care. And you all end up in the same, you know,
it's the same page. Interface.
I mean, it's the same interface. It looks the same. You can't tell that, you know, there's different things happening. But if there's any problem, you need to know where the problem is coming from. Is it from the system interface, the local interface, et cetera? So in that sense, yeah, we've started to go through some of these really kind of complex arrangements.
Do you have a troubleshooting, like formal troubleshooting document, or is it, you know, just in your head, you know, I have to do these checks, or is there something that's shared? If we do this, then we have to check this, or and then we have to do this in Primo, and we have to tell the libraries this, or you know what I mean? Like a formal checklist you go through. Okay, we made this decision, so that means now we have to talk to the people who do Primo, and then we do, you know, this, this, and this.
I can see there having to be more of that down the road. There is a communication stream, but it can get really complicated. So
yeah, that's why I was wondering, do you have like a flow chart?
make more flow charts. So if there's a problem, a troubleshooting problem, it may come to us several different ways. So there is, I would call it like a public chat. If someone's having a problem in the public catalog, they can send in a problem. That gets vetted by public services staff. Typically it comes into the technical services area as what we call our GLS online troubleshooting line. And our staff look at those on a regular basis. I mean, they're looking at it every day. It's their normal job to go through all those things and figure out what the problem is. Sometimes it may be within acquisitions, you know, is it an order problem, a licensing problem? Sometimes it may be more of a some technical problem at the other end. So we've got people in both areas researching those, looking at them, and they kind of communicate together. I think that works fairly well. When you start talking about, you know, like Primo and what does that mean, we do have, as we acquire resources, a process where they fill out this new electronic order form, if you will, that then flows through all the various departments. It goes usually starts in acquisitions, but it does go through cataloging, it does go through the library technology group. So different people pick up on the aspects that they're going to need to deal with. And they're aware of resources coming in the door. It also is the form that tells us where things are kind of located. Do I need to put this on a database A to Z list? You know, is it just individually cataloged? Am I bringing in a bulk load? So it's internal information.
That's a Madison process.
That's a Madison process, right. There's nothing system-wide. And I don't know if, I don't know, Katie, do you think there'd be enough demand individually on campuses? Most of the campuses don't have a lot of staff, so frequently it's like one person kind of does it all, and therefore frequently they don't write it out. I mean, when I talk about acquisitions procedures, especially, they'll tell me it's, well, it's all in my head and no one else needs to know because I'm the only one that does it. Here we've got a lot more people that have to kind of know or be aware of where to go to start asking questions.
So you guys don't have like a central office that isn't a campus? You guys are just, you're basically like the flagship campus? Is that?
There is a system office, but the system office is very, very small and it's basically one person, another right. Katie.
So there's really, yeah, very limited central staff. The flag that we're flagship is probably a reasonable way of saying, but again, you know, we get huge contributions from staff across the consortium and through our working groups. But
right.
Like Jackie suggested, the scope and scale of acquisitions activities, for example, is quite a bit larger here, obviously.
And system does not have staff with specific technical expertise in all the areas. They never have. That's never been the way it's been designed. It's the work is typically done amongst the system schools themselves.
Okay.
I did see a question pop up on the chat. I think they were just asking about the workflow that Jackie was speaking to, and that's actually a homegrown application that manages that. So that's not managed within ALMA at this point for the Madison processes to kind of.
It's just an error reporting like online form.
Well, we do a couple of things in terms of the entry point for the. We use Request Tracker for some of our entry point I guess we don't in the acquisitions area, but we use a couple of different tools, and then for tracking kind of the workflow for the new resources, that's handled through a dedicated application that we've written here.
Oh, okay. I'm just curious, for your eBury academic, did you choose to use the CZ for that, or... What did you do with it?
Yes, we have used the CZ. We felt those records were good enough.
Okay.
We actually purchased things. We may or may not purchase. Actually, we're going through a purchasing cycle right now. We may or may not purchase via eBury. And in fact, in some cases, we haven't. So recently, they're dropping a number of titles. We may have purchased them, but we've had to go to other places to purchase them. We may buy them directly from the publisher, you know, Wiley Springer or whatever. We may go through Gobi. Bill's been doing actually a lot of that work real recently. And then we have those titles that we know we want to buy, but we have a separate sequence at Madison of what we've currently prioritized. So, for example, if we're actually buying an ebook, an individual title, outside of major publishers, and Bill can rattle them off, we go to EBL as an aggregator first, then an eBrary version, and then we go through the various... scenarios, linear versus non-linear, unlimited, non-linear, et cetera, et cetera. And we can, if you want, Bill can go through that. If you want that level of detail.
So this is a sort of a decision tree about where to buy a book?
Yes, where to buy individual ebooks. Yeah.
I see.
And we are probably focusing more and more on going directly to publishers. That way we don't have to worry about digital rights.
Right.
But I would say at the system level, there has been no individual book, ebook buying. It's anything that's happened has been via a package of some sort.
What determines if it's good enough?
I'm sorry?
What determines if it's good enough? You were saying the eBury records in the CZ were good enough to use. What do you determine?
Know it when they see it.
Yeah. I Okay, this might be a question more than like Chris and Christine, because you've seen, you're the Vanguard libraries and you've seen this. When you looked at them, what did you think was good enough?
You know, I mean, that's always a difficult question. And, you know, our cataloging coordinator, Luis, is kind of like, he'd rather go to a more knowledge base centered approach, especially for things, you know, with eBrary or even with almost anything that's a subscription package where the titles are going to be changing once or twice a year or more. I think good enough, even for him as a cataloger, is just going to be if it has the correct title and the correct link to access it. Like, that's almost good enough. Especially with some of these, you know, you were talking about the PCI approach, and so many of these have some pretty robust, like, chapter level metadata that's going to come from Primo Central. And so, you know, as we think about what the point is of managing records in any of these approaches, you know, also looking to Primo Central and seeing what the coverage is there. And, you know, for Academic Complete, I have a very poor idea of how much is actually there in Primo Central, because I'll see some results that have, you know, a full table of contents and some where the title doesn't even seem to be there at the PCI level. So I think right now I'm trying to get a better sense of that too.
Is that the same at Wisconsin? Did you guys see the same thing?
We did some PCI testing yesterday because there's another group doing a whole bunch of activation of ebooks that we probably own it. You know, like it's an index of ebook collections that we might have access to or we have access to in print. And we noticed that, like, it just in doing a quick test of one of them, I think we checked 5 titles and 2 of them were not in there. So, I mean, it's kind of hit or miss. And I guess it depends on when they get updated, what their updates, the publisher's update cycle is with Ex Libris, you know, as to how complete it is.
And really what it is you're acquiring.
Yeah.
Because in some cases, you know, maybe you acquire a front list for a given year. In other cases, we bought certain groups of years or certain content where the publisher would have to create maybe a special set for us. So it doesn't always match up with the CZ collection. Size with the Academic Complete, size was also a factor. I think there's like 26,000 plus bib records. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we just thought since it's a DDA, we'll look at it more closely, anything we buy individually. You know, do we really want to spend a lot of time with a lot of extra, you know, cataloging going on or bulk loading of records? And they were pretty good. We tend to look at title, author, subject headings, I think, are important. I think we've had some comments on some records that they're not LC subject headings or something like that. And so I know the catalogers look at that. Can you think of anything else to look at specifically?
No, my expertise does not extend.
When we create the local collections of anything that's ultimately purchased from either an EBA or a DDA, I know those records are looked at much more carefully. Mm-hmm. I mean, they're definitely looked at. Right now, if we do an individual ebook purchase, frequently we have the publishers or the vendors sending an email directly to a number of people, including a cataloging line, if you will. Right? It's a generic cataloging. Right.
And what they'll find is just our, I guess you'd call it a stub record for the individual ebook, and they take it from there.
So, I'm sorry, for locally purchased items like that, it sounds like you're getting the record from the vendor and creating a local collection with them, or?
No, we are not getting the records from the vendor. The catalogers are cataloging them once they know that we have access to that ebook.
And those are things we order through Gobi.
Okay. If they are, say, from a particular vendor or project do you, and they were local items, not things shared by the system. Would your practice be to hook them up together as a local collection or just leave them all separate records?
I can just use likely language here. We are asked to name the collection when we do that stub record that I mentioned. So yes, I believe we are gathering these things into collections such as EBL, eBrary, Science Direct.
Yeah, we definitely are. So all our individual eBooks are put into local collections. I do think there is one local collection that's something like miscellaneous eBooks too, because they tend to be one-off. You know, they're not major publishers.
Right.
Generally speaking, so, you know, we have CRC, we have Wiley, all major publishers, and then a number of the aggregators too.
Okay. Lisa says in the chat, I think related to the records you're using for your local eBooks, and you're using WorldCat records?
Yes.
You are?
Okay. I mean, that's what the catalogers are doing.
Right.
At the time we place the order, it's just a brief record, isn't it?
It is. It's just a brief record, yeah.
This is Christine. I think one of the big questions that that started to have some, it's been on Alma's. If we have these relationships with the vendors and are able to get really good records, then why can't Ex Libris get the same records? And, you know, so some of these points that we've been discussing would become, you know, not relevant anymore, would be a lot less labor intensive if we could have the same records that, you know, our vendors are supplying to us. And I'm kind of hoping that our different consortiums will be able to put some pressure on Ex Libris to start developing better relationships with the same vendors and get the same records. So that's just something I've been thinking a lot about. And I agree with Chris that that I think that the records are mostly good enough. I would like to have subject headings. I think that's critical for a good record. So that's just some of the thoughts I've had.
Well, I think that's true, and I think we've always had some discussions about the ability to update records in the CZ, but then also concerns of if everybody can update, who's overriding what someone else did, and I don't think we have any clear answers on that yet. And I think the other part of it would be if you have good quality records in the CZ, if that would be a source of your record. So, for example, maybe we didn't buy a package. You have the entire front list for a given year for Science Direct, but maybe you're only buying a couple of those titles. Maybe the bib record would be in the CZ. Can you then pull it into your own local collection? Or do you use the CZ and just individually go through and endlessly click on individual titles that you want to activate? I'm not sure what would be the best longer term for that. We felt that if we have them in a local collection, we have more control over doing any sort of across-the-board update. If we needed to change a URL string or something like that, that we can control it locally. But it would be nice if we could rely on the CZ and yet know that someone else hasn't overlaid something that has now messed us up that we have to go back and somehow fix.
That's a good point.
Yeah. Have you done any uploading of records record sets to the CZ? I know that that's possible now.
No, I don't believe we have. They may be experimented with a couple in cataloging, but we have not deliberately kind of done a load to the CZ, no. Now we have bulk loaded and continue to load other records to the network zone that are local collections. So. But they're in the network zone and shared. So government documents, for example, archive records would be a good example of that. We load all electronic GPO information directly into the network zone, so all the individual schools no longer have to manage those on their own. What else do we have out there? We have the Wiley out there. We have some smaller databases in the network zone now, too. We've set up a couple of them, just kind of making sure things work. And frankly, our biggest questions to date have been more along the lines of how do you name these things both internally and to the public so you all know what it is you're really looking at? Because you can't change much in the way of the naming conventions for the CZ.
Mm. Lisa has a question in the chat. Are you using OCLC synchronization to update your network zone? Do you require OCLC numbers in the network zone?
I'm not sure what that means. I'm not a cataloger.
In that the things in the network zone have to have OCLC numbers. There might be some exceptions for like really, really ancient stuff or like archives things, but I mean that migration.
And I know, yeah, and I'm in migration. If it didn't have an OCLC number, it did migrate. Although, yeah, one could still. The idea being that those were things that need to be looked at and either put in collections or potentially dedupe in other ways. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I'd have to ask if they do the same thing again. I don't know if it's been, if people have thought that was, I don't want to say good or bad, but just was it kind of worth it? Did it do anything for us? I don't know.
Yeah, we had invited one of our catalogers and she was unable to make it today.
And this might be a question that I would have to pose to one of your catalogers, or have you done any work with using the OCLC WorldShare collection manager to supply any of your ebook records?
Not ebook records. Well, actually, no, I take that back. In acquisitions, not ebook records, but the catalogers may very well be doing it.
Because we're using WorldShare manager now. Mm-hmm. So what happens when we're ordering an individual ebook, for example, is the order's going out through acquisitions. And basically, well, in most cases, it's going out through acquisitions via Gobi. That would be our main supplier of individual ebooks that have been licensed that we know we can do. Okay, so we use a brief record for those.
Right.
But we've set up through YBP email communication. So when that order is fulfilled, an email will go directly to a couple of places internally. One comes to acquisitions. But one also goes directly to a cataloger list, if you will. And they pick up on those every morning, and they immediately catalog those things. And that's when I think they're actually using the WorldShare, the OCLC, and I'm assuming that's when, I don't know, do you know, Katie, is that when they're flagging, putting our symbol on it too? Because I think we have our symbol and everything in OCLC.
Yeah. Well, they'd either be doing it at that point, or I know there's another discussion right now about doing updates directly from Alma, doing the Alma OCLC publishing.
Oh, yeah.
That's something you don't really want to worry about until after you go live.
Until you have to.
Right, until you have to. basically, it will save your catalogers a step. I think if YBP communicate, if in that arrangement between YBP and the OCLC WorldShare, if they're automatically set, they could automatically set your holding at that point. Or what you would do, and this is what I was referring to, is as you, right now what catalogers would do if they were doing the manual processes, go into connection, set the symbol, download the record, overlay it with, in the MZ. With the publishing piece, that it saves that first step, the setting the holdings. So we'll say like once a week, I think you can even do it daily. You have almost kind of send a job to OCLC that says these holdings have been updated. They've been added. They've been, I don't know, updated in some way, or they've been deleted because they've been withdrawn. And so that's an automatic process that's sent it to OCLC. And basically what that does is you have to like contact them, sign a contract, get a project symbol. It's a long involved process, but it's something to kind of worry about after go live. But I know colleges does it, Milwaukee does it, and Madison is in the process of doing that, and I think it saves time from what I've heard from the catalogers. So.
Do you have any particular advice as far as the best ways to migrate existing ebook records?
We had a minor snafu when we migrated some of our E
came over as P-type orders, and some of our P came over as E-type orders. Now, it's too far in the past for me to remember the details, but whatever we did wrong, I don't think you want to do, because it took a while to figure these things out.
I'm not sure I can figure out what, I'm not sure we ever knew why they migrated the way they did exactly. I was trying to say something about the migration though. I was going to, a little bit of history on how Madison managed the ebooks in the past. So before we moved to Alma, when we had Voyager, were you Voyager users?
So, a couple of the campuses are, but mostly not.
So our way of managing e-collections back then, or like individual ebook purchases, was that we created actual locations for different collections. So we might have had a location that we called, you know, instead of Memorial Stacks, we might have called it E. Wiley. And because we had those collections, they were easy to pull off and then turn into a local collection in Alma. And Karen is the one who did all that work. So she could give you probably more advice on exactly how it was done. But because we had a unique group and could identify them, we could turn them into something else. Mm-hmm. And that you don't have those collections, I mean, you don't have those locations having the same meaning in Alma anymore. They don't even exist in Alma.
Right.
Yeah, and most of that whole process that Jackie just described was all done in that P to E migration process. So there's the config form, the migration form, and the P to E form.
Right, you've gone through that, right? Because you're getting
We've gone through, well, some people have gone through two rounds of it. Yeah. Mostly everyone's gone through one round of it, and the whole PDE thing was quite traumatic for everyone, I think. So we were looking at, for the real migration, what we need to recommend to everybody as far as your locally purchased titles, the systems titles, all of those things, as to should they go through PDE, should you not bother, all of those questions.
Yeah, and I just don't recall some of those discussions. We could probably dig some of that up and maybe talk to Karen, was quite a bit involved in that. That's when we can, I can maybe take back and just see if there, if we can identify for you any gotchas there in the logic behind it. I just don't know. I'm not sure anybody here.
I don't remember the reason why things went over. Well, historically, I think one of the distinctions in the records coming over too, and the P and the E parts of it, would be whatever record was in SFX. And if those records were basically coming in as, you know, it was print record, or the ISBN or ISSN, excuse me, was print, then it came over as print, even though we had it electronic. Also, we had an historical policy of where we were putting all our orders on one record. So if we'd historically had, say, a print subscription for years and years, the electronic order went on that same record. And that also would have caused some confusion coming over from Voyager to Alma.
Okay. Well, we're nearing the 1 hour mark, and I don't want to monopolize your time too badly. Did anyone else of my group have a question they wanted to bring up?
Wow, really good.
It's been really helpful. Gives us actually more questions to think about, I think.
Sure. Well, yeah, we might beg you for another brain picking session later on.
We can touch base again, you know, carving out an hour, that's fine, and yeah, I appreciate your respect for our time and everything else. So yeah, that's we're certainly willing to sit down and help. We it's not so far away from us that we understand where you're at. So anything that we can help alleviate concerns, we are happy to do our best.
Thank you. We're very grateful for that. Sure. And if you're able to dig out any of those like documents about best practices, recommendations, we would love it. We've been, of course, Orbis Cascade has a lot of their documents on a public website, which we've been shamelessly, you know, robbing.
We've looked there once or twice too. So.
Yeah. All right. Well, so unless someone else has things, we will sign off and stop the recording. And thank you very much for your time.